From KQED Public Radio and California Report, this is the Capitol Notes podcast for Friday, April 1st.
I've broken off discussions with members of the Republican Party here in Sacramento regarding solutions to our budget crisis.
It probably should have been an April Fool's joke to play somewhere after that.
Do we think that this Arnold Schwarzenegger comic strip is real, or is that an April Fool's joke?
We haven't even gotten to that. You jumped right to the topics.
Well, maybe that's the end.
That's Anthony York from the Los Angeles Times. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio.
I think it's a joke. I think it's plausible, but I think it's an April Fool's
the
gag.
The Schwarzenegger cartoon
Governator superhero.
We'll come in just a moment. Stay tuned, podcast fans. But first, since we were gone last week, too, and I apologize, and my three-year-old apologizes for being sick.
Hey, I'm 36.
On a good day.
And you don't own me.
On a good day. Right. We've got a lot to talk about where things went wrong. Where did it all fall apart
for John, so negative.
The governor's quest for a special budget election in June and a $26 billion deal before the flowers had bloomed in Sacramento, which ain't going to happen now.
It ain't over.
It ain't over, but it is on a slower, more fiscally year-minded track now. It ain't happening in the next couple of days or weeks,
right,
is my point.
Right. And look, every budget fight only ends once, and it always ends the same way, with a budget. So we'll get a budget, whether or not we have a June election, whether or not we have any election, whether or not there are tax increases.
Well, we won't have a June election. Everybody said that now.
The governor has not ruled it out.
Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg said no June election. Fair enough.
Right.
You're right. Governor didn't say it. We're all assuming
but
there's no
the
June
odds
election.
Are looking longer, right, about a June election now. And so now
I'm going to call it dead, and that way if it actually happens, I can eat
there's a resurrection. Well, with a resurrection caveat, right?
Yes.
It's dead. Right.
So a lot happened or didn't happen or was said or wasn't said over the last couple of weeks. It's been a pretty unusual time. Maybe not unusual in the sense, as you're saying, that budget negotiations are always rocky and things blow up a lot. But different, I think, than years past, and different because we have a different governor.
Yeah.
And a different dynamic in the state capitol.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure where we should start with this thing. I mean, we all know, for those of you listening, you certainly know that as we played that bit of tape from the governor's YouTube address there at the top a moment ago, that the governor officially called off his negotiations with Republicans this week, at the beginning of the week, and that for all intents and purposes, the saga we've been through over the last few weeks is either, as Anthony just alluded to, on deep freeze or dead.
Or being modified.
Or being modified and to be resurrected right at some other point.
I mean, I think you're right. You know, the president pro tem, Daryl Steinberg, has said a June election now appears dead. Certainly the hope has dimmed even in the administration for a June election. That much is clear. What's unclear is what the alternative is. Is the alternative a plan to pass taxes without any election? Is it a September election? Is it a November election? Is there some hybrid where you could pass some temporary tax extensions legislatively so that when voters are asked to vote on them, they're still voting on tax extensions? All sorts of things are being discussed.
Needless to say, things did not go well after Friday of last week. Friday of last week, to roll back the clock, was when, as we last spoke to you, we had five Republicans at various times, not five all the time, and on and on and on, but a handful, maybe not, really not five at the end, three at the end,
yeah.
Talking to the governor and his staff about what kinds of budget changes and government changes they would want to see before they would consider voting for the special election. Then somehow the negotiating authority was handed over to the Republican leader of the Senate, Bob Dutton. And then Dutton on Friday and Bob Huff, the vice chair of the Budget Committee, Republican state senator, gave Governor Brown a list of items. And we'll talk about the list in a moment, what to make of that list. that apparently the governor didn't take too kindly to and fired off his own letter.
We have to talk about that?
We have to talk about it a little bit. And then Friday night, Messrs. Dutton and Huff released the entire list to the media, along with notations about where they said the governor was on negotiating over certain things. Things got ugly.
Yeah.
Monday, it was all over, effectively.
Right. Look, this has been a very murky time. there's been a time of questionable negotiation tactics, questionable motives, questionable communication strategy all the way around. I hesitate to delve too deeply into what we've just been through because, you know, we've all picked up fragments of information that feel like versions of the truth, you know? There are some Democrats who believe Republicans never wanted a deal, that this is all some sort of game.
To run out the clock on the special election.
Right. There are those who believe that some members of the five were negotiating in good faith and others were not. There's a sense that the governor is not able to break with labor unions. There's a sense that the Republicans do not know how to negotiate. There's a sense from the Senate leader, Bob Dutton, that the governor's wife yelled at him. You know, I mean,
we heard that here on Thursday. Yeah.
Right. And so there's been a lot of insinuation and stories about what's happened.
Well, one thing that I think that you could take out of, because Anthony and I were both in this chit-chat, a lot of reporters were, with Dutton and Huff, the two Republican leaders, on Thursday morning, where they wanted to lay out their version of events. Because I do believe they realized that in the last 4 or 5 days, or almost a week since they put the list out Friday night, they have gotten a lot of bad press, either from the mainstream press and journalists, not really so much us, but opinion writers, blogs, tweets, cyber, you know, anything and everything, that the 53 things, the 7-page list was a demand full of unreasonable demands of, you know, this, that, and everything. And I think that this was largely to try to tell their own side of that story. But one of the things that came out of the conversation with Dutton and Huff, and I want to see, Anthony, what you think about this, is that I took from that you really were looking at very different negotiating styles. And I would call them, at least for this point.
Are we accepting nominations for understatement of the year?
Yes, we are. Okay. And I just won. Okay. But I would point to to what feels like the Brown negotiating style versus either the Republican style or the style that has been in place in the last few years. Because Dutton talked a lot about the lack of a big five, the four leadership leaders and the governor negotiating, which is a function of state government that has really existed since Brown left office. Brown, I think, was looking to negotiate more with particular Republicans who he thought would go along with what he needed.
He tried to pick off a group outside of the leadership.
Which is more reflective of the strategy of even the last Democratic governor when he had something he needed. Big Gray Davis was really the last guy who used an effective pickoff strategy. We're setting aside the 2009 Schwarzenegger oddity just for a moment. But, you know,
a Republican doesn't pick off Republican members.
Think about the Davis budget pickoff. You got Dickerson and Briggs and the others.
You know, I missed the Davis years. I was covering other things.
Well, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. No doubt.
But anyway, so you had very different styles here, you know, and Dutton repeated over and again, you know, these needed to be leadership negotiations. And that's reflective somewhat of the culture of the Capitol now, which is that, you know, there is a top-down kind of mentality about negotiations here. I mean, you know, rank-and-file legislators don't typically negotiate with governors, at least they have not. And that's not to say they can't or shouldn't. It's just an acknowledgement that the style for so many years has been big five, big five,
well,
big five.
As Dutton acknowledged today in this press conference, he said there were a group of five senators in his caucus, five of the 15, that viewed things a little different, that wanted to actively negotiate a series of what they call reforms the governor.
Those five, Anthony Cannella of Ceres,
Tom Berryhill of Modesto,
Bill Emerson
of Hemet, Sam Blakesley of San Luis Obispo, and Tom Harmon of Huntington Beach.
Thank you.
And that those five senators wanted to negotiate something that the strong insinuation was they wanted to negotiate these things in a way that was different than the way the rest of the Republican caucus wanted to do it. And so Brown tried to engage them directly. And Dutton seemed today to be saying, you know, they should have negotiated with those five through the leadership. I guess. I don't know.
I thought it was fairly confusing because he also said, well, no one ever asked me to come down and talk. But I think that the senator probably could have gone down and said, hey, I want to be a part of it, too. I mean, you know, and this gets back to the whole, you know, interpersonal relationships. And like you said, no reason to start pulling apart who said what to who about that. I mean, that, you know, that's
right.
We're never going to get to the bottom of that and
right.
No reason
about
to even go
collapsed.
Through it. But it does reveal, you know, somewhat of the way the process was going, which is, I mean, the governor clearly was, you know, had gotten the read implicitly or explicitly that that he wasn't going to get anywhere through the model of leaders because the leaders had already come out publicly and said, we're not doing it. Dutton had said he wasn't going to do it. Connie Conway in the assembly said she wasn't going to do it. And so, you know, the governor did go looking for an alternative strategy. In the end, that alternative strategy didn't work. And again, you know, we don't know why as to what the governor could have gotten or not gotten. I mean, if you look at that list of things, and the governor's never refuted that list, or his people have never refuted that list. Friday night, you probably got the same message that I did. Well, it would have to be looked at carefully here. We can't say that yet. You know, do these accurately reflect the governor's position on pensions and spending and all those things?
Because the list, there was some notation on this list that the governor had compromised on certain things. But
the lack of refutation sense by the Brown administration leads me to assume that they were largely accurate.
Oh, yeah.
Positions of where the governor is.
I think so, too.
In which case, the governor had gone... Republicans may not think far enough, but further than he had gone in public about several things.
All the more curious, from a communications perspective only, all the more curious about this decision to release this document in this way on Friday. I mean, for the last 2 weeks, we've been having a very public conversation about Brown's plan for tax extensions, right, on the ballot in June, and then some reforms that Republicans want, including changes to pensions, a cap on future spending, and changes to state regulations, right? And so on Friday, when this public document was released and it had all these other things on it, I was confused. You know, I've been covering this, you and I have been covering this as closely as anybody, and we were, I think, among those who said, you know, hey, wait, look, we've been talking about three or four things, and now all of a sudden we're talking about 53 is the number that the governor's office attached to it. But we're talking about this seven-page document filled with things that we haven't been talking about over the last couple of weeks. And so there was a muddying of the waters, I think, in terms of that ultimately brought these negotiations pretty much to an end. Now, after that, on Friday, there seemed to be over the weekend a reconvening of a smaller group.
Yeah, you thought something was going to go down. You thought it was going to actually happen. I think you and I talked on Monday,
and you were getting vibes. Felt like there was some progress being made, that the scope had been refocused. The governor wrote a letter to Dutton and Huff on Friday asking them to refocus.
Or as he scribbled on the bottom of it, let's get moving.
Yeah, yeah, because we saw that yesterday. Yeah. That he wanted to refocus and on these issues. And so there was a group of three senators. It was Senator Kinella, Senator Emerson, and Senator Berryhill, who reengaged with the governor's staff on the weekend and got very close. And as late as Monday night, I believe it was, Monday night or Tuesday night, they walked out of a meeting at about mid-afternoon thinking there was going to be a deal. I mean, that was at least one characterization that I heard. Again, this is very Rashomon. I mean, everybody has their own version of the same event and what actually happened. And then sometime between about 2 in the afternoon and 11 o'clock that night, the whole thing blew up. The next
day. Or
even
later than that. One person told me after midnight the governor pulled the plug, but whatever.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, a very late decision.
Then there were YouTube videos. Things were being canceled
Now, what issue exactly broke that down? I mean, I don't know. You tell me. You talked to him before I did, but I had a quick chat with Bill Emerson off the floor of the Senate here on Thursday because we're taping this on Thursday. Duh.
Right.
I feel like I still have to say this thing that it's presuming it. You got this at 6 in the morning on Friday and we were here early. Nah.
No.
But I talked to Emerson, who said that he believed the sticking point was the spending cap.
Right.
That they could not find a way that Democrats and Republicans would agree on what this temporary spending cap would look like. I mean, again,
different versions, you know.
It's one person.
I've heard another version that the gulf was that Brown was willing to reduce his call for tax extensions from 5 years to four. That the Republicans wanted him to come down to three, and that was a gulf that couldn't be bridged, that difference between 3 and 4 years. I've heard there was talk about the spending measure that's already on the February 2012 ballot, what was known as ACA-4.
The rainy day reserve / linear regression smoothing plan.
That there was talk about accelerating that, moving that to the June ballot. But then Labor would have had to endorse that, and there was something in ACA-4 that Labor didn't want to have to endorse that, because they would have to endorse whatever package of initiatives is on the ballot if they're going to endorse the taxes and the, you know, they need a yes vote on the Brown plan. And so I heard that was one. I mean, again, I can't tell you what the truth is. I can just tell you the different things that I've heard. Again, the spending cap idea, and one person suggested to me that, well, what the Republicans say is a spending cap issue is really, when you boil it down, is this issue of 3 versus 4 years on the taxes. That's the same issue. So I don't know what grinding them to a halt, but I think that the governor ultimately felt like this was – that the clock had run out on this particular option, and that it was time to take a break and consider some other options.
You know, the whole idea that it would have – because the Friday night list, as we'll call it, reiterated what we had heard a lot before that, which was that that Republicans were insisting the tax increases were only 18 months, which, you know, the governor had apparently told them no way. So, you know, this bartering on the length of the tax extensions, you know, interesting, except that when I put on my policy hat, I try to see how that would work with the realignment plan, because those taxes are inextricably linked to this complicated realignment of state and local government, with a lot of the money going to local governments.
Well,
and it seems like it would have blown up the entire alliance that he had with counties and local officials about those services if you were starting to roll back the amount of time the money was guaranteed. But,
right. And this is that's why this Brown proposal is very tightly woven together, and that's why he's been reluctant to publicly diverge from his plan at all, saying my plan is my plan.
Because you pull one stick out of it. And,
right, and the whole thing begins to unravel.
So, it's like a Jenga game.
Anyway. Ball of yarn. Yarn Jenga.
That one I find interesting. I mean, the pension stuff obviously was out there, and pension reform lies in the eye of the beholder. I mean, so what exactly is, you know, what qualifies as enough changes to the public employee pension process? And again, this is where I go back to things that the governor has not said in public, that the list says the governor had agreed to in principle, like
a cap on pensions.
Like a cap on pensions, no more than about $106,000, I think, was the cap that anyone's pension could be. With mild exceptions.
Where are the firefighters on that, do you think?
Where
are the cops? Okay, let's call them.
And a possible 401k system or a hybrid system for future state employees.
As an option.
Which is a big deal for public employee unions.
Yeah.
And again, those are things that the Jerry Brown had never said in public that, you know, did show, it seemed like to me at least, that he was out there talking about these kinds of ideas. I mean, the governor has talked about changing public employee pensions since the campaign, but never to those kinds of particulars. I want to talk about the list for a moment. I know but we were treated to an explanation of that list by Senate Republican Leader Dutton today, that it wasn't a list. He called it an agenda, an outline,
As he said, there is no demands. That's a direct quote from Senator Dutton today.
Which we'll assume that the subject verb agreement was a mild error. Whether or not that was treated as that or presented as that, I mean, it's hard to see how you couldn't know it was going to be seen as that.
Even if
you, the Republicans who put it there, say it wasn't that, because Dutton's argument, for those of you. Let me just tell you what he said to us. He effectively said, you know, look, I, as the leader, had not been involved in the negotiations. I wanted to bring a document in that said this is what I understand has been done so far, and these are all the kinds of concerns that we Republicans have had all year long. I'll take him at his word on that.
Whatever.
Anthony's done with this topic, but just bear me out for a moment. But that being said, if in fact that's all accurate, I just was going to point out that you would have to know that it was going to be seen otherwise when you brought it in on a Friday at this pressure cooker time on the calendar for the election. So it strikes me as somewhat surprising
maybe
that someone wouldn't see this as getting construed as a demand list.
Maybe the Senate Republican Caucus should hire you as a media consultant.
No, they've got plenty of good smart people over there. But, you know, however it all came out right, it is exhausting. They have to figure out where to go from here. The ideas, none of them are pretty. One idea that gets talked a lot about that Daryl Steinberg, the leader of the state Senate, Democrat,
he said it was his preference.
Mentioned, yes, in a chat with reporters on Thursday. And it's been talked about a lot. George Skelton of the LA Times wrote about it. I have heard it privately for the last few weeks.
From
labor and Democratic-leaning groups.
And business groups, too.
Saying, let's just ask the handful of Republicans in the legislature who you've been talking to or others to approve a tax increase.
Right.
Let's not go to the ballot where the voters may or may not do it. If we're going to start twisting arms and making huge concessions inside the Capitol, get something that you know for sure you're going to get out of those negotiations. Ask them for the tax increase. Pass the tax increase inside the Capitol.
And there's another dimension. Now, Brown, of course, has made a political vow, right, during the campaign. And since he's become governor, he said repeatedly, no tax increases without a vote of the people, right? This is a political promise that he's made. And I do think that there's a certain poetry there's a political reason why this might be a tenable solution ultimately. Republicans believe that – the Republicans who I've talked to believe that voting for taxes, voting for an election on taxes is tantamount to political suicide. They believe that –
first of all, they believe they're the same thing.
Well, they believe that the forces on the right, taxpayer groups, are not making a distinction, and that they will pay a political price for either way, and that with the election, that no Democrat with this budget, they don't believe that any Democrat is being asked to make the same kind of vote. They don't believe that any Democrat is being asked to cast a vote that will end their political career. So if Brown went back on a political vow, then you could see an argument, hey, look, we're breaking our word, but so is the governor, and we're doing it because we forged a compromise for what's best for California. Is that the issue? Is that the issue? I don't know.
Would they consider that a fair trade, though, that the governor would be doing that instead of Democrats in the legislature?
I don't know. But I think now the legislature just hides under the umbrella of the governor. I mean, look, it's the governor they're negotiating with. I mean, you know, a lot of the forces behind the Democratic Party, the Teachers Association, the Public Employee Union, SEIU, these forces now are negotiating not through Daryl Steinberg or John Perez as they have when there was a Republican governor. They're negotiating directly through the administration, through the governor's office. And so, I mean, the governor is the negotiator. I mean, I don't know. Is this all an elaborate plan that will lead to the election of Kevin McCarthy as governor in 4 years? Do some people think that way? Probably.
How do they get that 7 degrees of separation? How do they make that?
We've got months.
Yeah.
We've got months.
Okay.
But listen, I've spent a lot of the last couple of weeks trying to guess how other people think based on the information they give me, and I am tired. I'm officially exhausted.
I mean, I want to throw back out here something that I think maybe I've mentioned in a podcast before. I don't know, but I still keep coming back to it, is that if one is to take what has happened so far and at least make a reasonably logical assumption that the governor's campaign promises, as they stood, don't work when matched up to the reality of the Capitol right now. That's not to say they won't ever work,
right?
But they're not working right now. I mean, there's the, that's hard to disprove. If one is to take that theory and then is to say, okay, well, what has to be modified out of that, or what might should be modified out of it? It seems to me that the governor could always make the argument, I tried to take it to the people
I'm
that
sure
way.
There's a
I tried that. I wasn't able to do it that way, you know, and I've got to solve this problem the best way that I can. I would think that the last one of the promises the governor would back off on, and this is a difficult one for the path forward, is the no gimmicks budget, the no smoke and mirrors.
Because before the tax or after the – so taxes he would sacrifice first, you're saying?
Not taxes, but the – yeah, taxes to the people, right, an election of the people on taxes.
That he wait, just so I'm clear, you're saying that he would sooner –
and I have no reason to know this.
But your theory is that he would sooner jettison the promise he made to the people about taxes – than he would jettison the promise about gimmicks in the budget.
I think it would be an easier sell to the public.
Which? The taxes?
I think it would be an easier sell to say, I tried the taxes, but I'm sticking to my no gimmicks pledge.
And so I'm going to raise your taxes without your – I mean, look –
well, I don't know. The problem becomes is that he would get a lot of credit for striking a deal with Republicans – to increase taxes in the Capitol and making the argument, right. I tried to do it the other way. The system wouldn't let me do it.
George Skelton would celebrate.
Well,
it,
he
right?
would, but he would, get a lot of scorn, not just from Mr. Skelton, but from a lot of corners to continue the practices of the last few years of the gimmick budgets. And so it seems like to me, if the governor's, you know, premise all along has been, we've got to, you know, I'm the adult in the room. Then the adult in the room is the one who just says, you know, one of these is an issue of pragmatism. One of these is an issue of honesty.
Right.
And I've got to be honest with the people. This is how much money we have. I mean, I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
And I do think, that one of the things that dragged, that ended up weighing down the negotiations, again, I don't know that this was the fatal blow, but I think these public opinion polls that both business and labor groups have circulated among their allies that indicate that these taxes, if put on the ballot, face an uncertain political future. And so, you know, again, getting back to this idea of whether or not Republicans are being asked to commit political suicide, are they in the end doing it for something that won't even be implemented? You know, that certainty is gone if the governor breaks his political vow. But then, of course, you know, these Republicans will be directly in violation of the taxpayer pledge that they all signed, or the vast majority of them have already signed.
Yeah, so we'll see. Just as we were about to wrap up this podcast, just to reflect the fact that news does not stop when Anthony and I step into this little small studio. Why in the hell does it not stop? That's actually what I need to know. Both of our iPhones went off while we were having that last conversation, and the governor put out a 12-point pension plan that largely mirrors what the Republican list from last week said the governor had agreed to, which was no spiking, a cap on the amount of pensions, the size of a pension. And then it has things it says that are still under consideration, like the whole hybrid 401k thing.
The cap is also under development.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So – it's an interesting development where the governor, I guess, feels the need to get out there with that and say, this embrace the issue, hopefully maybe reframe it, I guess.
Well,
I
mean,
let's talk about
about
media strategies
right.
a lot.
Right,
the
right.
strategy could be here to say, look, I am for all these things. This isn't what – in other words, this isn't what I called off negotiations for because look what I'm willing to do.
That was the other thing that the Friday Night List showed with that annotation. It showed where the governor has moved. I mean, again – in terms of a PR strategy, it showed the governor appeared reasonable. I think most people would read it and say, hey, wow, he's come further on pensions privately than he ever has publicly. He's negotiating in good faith, you know. So where are the rest of the compromise? Again, I know my Republican friends have an answer about all the other issues like tax reform that were rejected out of hand and education reform that Senator Huff wanted. But again, in the communications wars, you know, have some sensitivity as to how these things are going to be interpreted and reported.
And especially with pensions drawing so many headlines these days and so much bandwidth and so much everything. Well, before we end this very long podcast, let's go back to what we said we were going to start to. This report, apparently, that Arnold Schwarzenegger is in development of a cartoon, a comic strip, excuse me, about, I can't even get through the whole thing without like rolling my eyes too, a comic strip about his time as governor called The Governator.
You know, it's plausible in the world of Schwarzenegger, but I can't help but notice that this thing is supposed to hit the stands on April Fool's Day.
Which is the day this podcast is out.
Yeah, there you go. So
by the time the podcast is out, people will either know or not whether this was crap.
My vote is still for the latter. But then it, with, but the, with the caveat.
Never underestimate Arnold Schwarzenegger to come up with something as random as a comic strip about his time as governor.
Also his sense of humor to have this be a gag.
Yes.
So.
But I just want to read the quote from this Entertainment Weekly article for a moment, whether it's a real quote or not. It's just because this is what made me instantly laugh. When I ran for governor back in 2003, I'm not doing the accent, and I started hearing people talking about the governator, I thought the word was so cool. The word governator combined two worlds, the world of politics and the movie world. And this cartoon brings everything together. It combines the governor, the Terminator, the bodybuilding world, the True Lies.
Well, you know, when your life's experience can be summed up in a cartoon, then, you know, I mean, that's great. That's great. I mean, the fact that it would be of interest. I still think it's
the great thing about it being a cartoon is that the governor always said he couldn't print money to solve the state's problems. In a cartoon, why couldn't he?
I think he'd come up with something better than that. I mean, cartoons can walk through walls and fly and print money. I don't think counterfeiting
is. Do you think he still gets in a motorcycle accident and a skiing accident if in fact he's a superhero in a cartoon?
Does he have a license?
Right, but superheroes don't get busted lips or broken legs.
Well, we have all summer to talk about this.
We may only have a few minutes. We'll never talk about it again. You'll know by the time the podcast is out whether that was a great April Fool's joke. And if it was, I credit Adam Mendelsohn, a longtime political advisor to the governor, for sending that around to all of us on Wednesday. That's it for this podcast. Thanks, as always, for listening. For Anthony York from the LA Times, I'm John Myers from KQED. See you next time.